The Cannabis Conversation. A European perspective on the emerging legal cannabis industry.
Welcome to the Cannabis Conversation with Anoush Desai, where we explore the new legal cannabis industry by speaking to the professionals that are helping to shape it. Hope you're all well. It's a little bit hot here in London. Hope you're all surviving. Not much for me this week as we wind down towards the summer break. I'm actually going to be taking a few weeks off from the podcast. I've been releasing episodes pretty much every week for the last 3.5 years, so I'm taking August off. It's been such a great experience doing this podcast, but it is quite a commitment, so I'm looking forward to some rest away from the mic. I've got a couple more episodes before the break. On a personal front, I was very privileged to be invited to the All-Party Parliamentary Group for CBD Products in the UK. This is headed up by Crispin Blunt MP and Baroness Mansour. The secretariat to the APPG is Tenacious Labs, run by Nick Morland. Even though the title of the APPG is focused on CBD, the secretariat had prepared a plan for how a regulated cannabis sector in the UK could work, taking into account medical cannabis and hemp and various other aspects too. It's a very thorough piece of work. Special shout to Andy Cutbill, Renata Legierska and Charlie Sampson, who co-authored the report, although with lots of others who helped too. It was really interesting to be in the House of Commons on the hottest day of the year. Also with a leadership contest going on in the background, I was anxious to see lots of plotting and scheming going on in the corners, but sadly I didn't see anything too juicy. The plan is a very sensible one, I think. Hopefully builds in a piecemeal fashion to get people comfortable with a topic that still carries a lot of stigma for many. And the parliamentarians in the room were very supportive and hopeful that they can convince others. So let's see what happens. I'll keep you updated. Anyway, back to the show. We're back again with a show sponsored by our good friends at Lumino. In it, we talk about treatment centres. Lumino have some great experience in recruiting for clinics, clinical nurses, clinic managers, specialist doctors, amongst others. And they've seen how these organisations have developed over the past few years. So you have some really great advice around this. So as always, if you need help with HR recruitment, please do get in touch with them at luminorecruit.com. And obviously, please do mention my name when you do. Now, on with the show. Enjoy. On today's show, I have Gary Roberts. Gary is founder of Promises Innovative Recovery. He also has a top-rated podcast called Good Dudes Grow. And he is CEO and founder of Pure Body Zen. Gary, welcome. How are you?
Anoush, I am doing awesome. How about you, my friend?
I am very good. Always good to have a fellow podcaster on so you can show me up and tell me how it's really done. Where in the world are you today?
Right now in the United States, Florida, South Florida. Nice and hot.
Nice. Yeah, I bet it's hot. Yeah, that's good. And we'll catch up a bit on what you're generally doing in a second. Where we like to begin is your personal story. And it's going to be an interesting one. It's a really interesting topic we're going to talk about later. But you've got a really interesting backstory as well and a really powerful reason for being involved in this. So do you want to tell us a bit about you?
Backstory. Oof, this can go in 18 different directions. But basically, I'm a firefighter, 18-year veteran firefighter. South Florida, for a lot of people who know, is pretty much the mecca of the addiction recovery area. Everybody wants to actually recover in South Florida because they want to recover around palm trees and sand and sun. You know, they don't want to stay up in Maine or Massachusetts where it's raining and muggy. You know, they'd rather just come down here and enjoy themselves like the Caribbean. But I would basically seen overdoses all my life. It was like part of the job. It became basically second nature. You know, I met my wife down here. She had two beautiful daughters. I got married to her and, you know, I committed to them to make their safety, to take care of them. And so just like I do with everybody on 911 calls. And unfortunately, my daughter was in a bad vehicle accident and she got hooked on some pain medication. She got hooked on opiates. And if you've ever seen the stories that are out there, once you go down the road of opiates, it ends up going to different directions because once you get cut off from opiates, that pain doesn't go away or that feeling that you, that craving of whatever the opiates did to you keeps going on. So you need to find different ways. And she went down that road. And unfortunately on her 27th birthday, she had an overdose and passed away, which for me basically hit hard because on a regular basis, I bring people back from the dead consistently. And, you know, you promise your other daughter, your wife, that you'll protect them. And the thing that you do on a daily basis for 18 years without a hitch, you couldn't do for your own personal sibling. And my life started to change at that point, and I started trying to figure out, you know, it changed a little bit before that because my daughter was one of those people who was always caring. She always tried to change herself to make other people better. And so she would actually come to us and say, hey, listen, I want to go into rehab. I can't do this anymore. And she would be the one that would say, I want to go to rehab to change. It wouldn't be something that was forced. You know, she's not like, I hate the word when people go an addict because it paints a description of somebody you see on TV, the low and out, you know, kind of thing. A lot of addicts aren't like that. They are people who got stuck in just bad situations. And like my daughter, she was smart. She was beautiful, you know, and she went into these rehabs and she came out basically with more drugs than she went in with, which completely blew my mind. So they were just trading from one drug to the other, and it was ridiculous. And so we decided to come together, my wife and her, and say, how can we change what's going on down here? Because we need to change it. It's terrible. I see it all the time. She sees it from the inside, you know, and she said, well, let's create a recovery facility using something different, like health and wellness, or what can we do? And so we started building that, and we started out with building that called, we have a nonprofit called Promises Recovery Centers, and we started doing that. It was her idea to make a nonprofit because we didn't want to actually be people get stuck with insurance companies, having to deal with that, having to understand, okay, you can't get in here, you can't get in there. So we said, let's make a nonprofit to where we can actually, you know, pay for the treatments and do whatever we have to do. And while we were building that, that's when she ended up passing away. So we kept working out in her name. And 3 months after that, I get a call from my mom and my dad passes away. And I'm like, my dad had a TBI, had a stroke. So, you know, he wasn't in bad shape, but okay. So I flew down to see what has happened. And I found out that my dad was actually printing up his own opiate medication prescriptions and getting opiates. And I think he actually overdosed in his own sleep, you know, because too many opioids lower your respiratory rate. And next thing you know, you just stop breathing. And my mom found her husband dead beside her. And then 3 weeks after that, one of my fellow firefighters committed suicide because he couldn't take, you know, what he's been seeing for the last so many years. So I guess I could say the last 3 years has been day-to-day trauma of bad things happening. And I've been on a path of trying to change how all this works. So I've been trying to find a different way to help everybody.
Wow. Gary, I don't know where to start there, but thank you for sharing that. It's super powerful. And there's so much there, isn't there? I guess, you know, these are really, really powerful reasons for you to get involved in what you're getting involved in. And the Promises Innovative Recovery is your new project, but you've also got these other projects that are going on the nonprofit side. Again, we'll talk about that a bit in a second, and we'll kind of get back to the sort of reasons that you got involved. But you also have another company called Pure Body Zen, is that right?
Correct. It's kind of tough telling my story because the whole concept of my story started out in one version, and then it grew into another version, Now, like you said, it's gone into Promises Innovative Recovery, which is the full encapsulated version of everything that I started. So basically what I ended up started doing is I started, when my daughter was going through her last few stints of rehab, that's when Florida decided to try and change the cannabis laws to medical cannabis. That's when I started investigating the options of medical cannabis for pain. I started looking at CBD, basically, for me, because I couldn't use medical cannabis because I'm still on the job and they still find it illegal for us to use, even in low doses. So I was actually a CrossFit athlete. I was training all the time. I was a top for 3 years in a row, top 100 in the world in my age group. So I was trying to figure out new ways to recover from injuries, from, you know, anything to make myself better. And I started reading more about cannabis, CBD, and how that helped and everything else. And I went down that road and I said, well, if it could help me with my pain, it'll probably can help my daughter with her pain. And so I says, but, you know, it's the wild, wild west out there. Well, where are we going to get this stuff? You know, it was illegal in Florida. I had to order it from California. It came in this little, you know, funky little box. Just, you know, we don't know what it looks like because they're sending it through the mail. And back then it was still illegal to send through the mail. So it came out, you know, different types of boxes so it doesn't look like CBD. And when it finally came down, it tasted like crap, tasted like dirt. I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm one of those guys. If it tastes like dirt and works, you know what? I'm going to use it. It didn't work. You know, my wife's like, what are you doing buying this stuff? It's just BS. It's just BS. And I kept reading and I kept reading and I kept investigating companies. I kept trying. And finally, I found this company which worked because it went through my holistic doctor, which takes my, blood work and everything every 3 months. And she goes, oh, I got the guys. You got to do this. It's out of Colorado. They became legalized. You got to try this stuff. I'm like, okay. And at the time, I was going through a patellar, kind of like a patellar injury. Basically, I had Achilles tendonitis in both feet. Basically, it was like walking on shards of glass. And if you've ever been a firefighter working 24 hours and you know, 80 pounds of gear, it just was uncomfortable. And I was like that for a year. I did everything. I went from physical therapy, massages, cryotherapy. The last choice I had was actually surgery where they were going to cut my fascia at the bottom of my feet. And I didn't want to do that. And I'm like, that sounds a lot more painful than what I'm going through. So I says, you know what? This is the last resort. Let's try this product. And I stood in my kitchen. I took the product. And within 20 minutes later, my pain went down from like a 8 to a 3. And I'm like, well, this is interesting. And my wife's standing in the kitchen and going, you are a complete moron. That is a placebo effect. You just want it to work. You know, you've been doing this for years trying to figure this thing out. He goes, you're never going to figure it out. I'm like, no, I swear to God. I'm like, it actually works. So I went to the gym like, please, if you're listening to this, don't try this at home. If you have Achilles tendonitis, don't do this. So I went to the gym and I jumped rope. I'm going to test this out. I'm one of those people that, you know, I'm going to test out to make sure it works on myself first before I do anything to anybody else. And it stayed at 3. And then finally, basically 4 weeks later, went away. And I said, okay, this is the company I need to talk to. And the first thing I says, okay, it worked for me. Unfortunately, back then, I was using low-dose THC, which if I would have got drug tests, probably would have popped and it would have been a whole big other issue. But so that was the panic part. So I didn't tell anybody what I was doing. But I asked the company, basically, can you make a THC-free one? Because if this works for, if THC-free works for me, you know, I'm going to start helping some firefighters that are, you know, having trouble with pain and stuff and get off the pain meds. And that's how that started. That's how Pure Body Zen came in. It was basically purely designed for first responders to use because I knew they do not want to lose their jobs on something. Okay, it makes them feel good, but if they get drug tested, they lose their pension, lose their career, lose everything else. It's not something that I could afford. And I knew that if I double-tested it, triple-tested it, made sure it didn't have the THC in it, I felt safe giving it to them. They felt safe taking it. And that's how Pure Body Zen came to about.
Right. Wow. And again, like really good first-hand experience of understanding specifically why that you needed that kind of isolate or a non-THC CBD product. And finally, let's talk a bit about your podcast as well. How did that come about?
Well, it came about basically because I was using my own Pure Body Zen and secretly selling it like kind of like the backdoor drug dealer at the fire department going, psst, come here, want to try some of this? And you know, because again, it just became legal. I'm a firefighter. We're not allowed basically to sell this stuff. It's on our legal substance list. You know, they were still having that big battle federally and state-wise of, you know, legal, not legal. You know, it was still that big thing. And I said, okay, you know what? We need to start educating some people. So what I did is I started knocking on some doors at the beginning. I knocked down on my health committee door and said, hey, listen, I need to bring this out to the front because this stuff has been helping people. And just so for an example, I gave my first bottle to a fellow firefighter who was having neck problems. And he called me probably about 3 days later and says, dude, what'd you give me? I'm like, uh-oh, what happened? Did you get drug tested? What happened? You know, I'm panicking, sweating profusely. He's like, no, he goes, the pain's gone. But I've never told anybody this before, but I've been having these nightmares, these terrible thoughts. I was yelling at my wife. I hated my kids. I was going down this road and I've tried everything. I was on antidepressants and everything else. And I started taking this thing and those thoughts kind of slowly went away. My anger kind of slowly calmed down. I started being a little more calmer. I said, and kind of changed everything that was going on. So whatever it is, it's completely changed, you know, how I feel about my kids, my wife and everything else. I was going down, I was going to get a divorce and everything. Now I'm see things differently. So, you know, I don't know what's in this thing, but it's amazing. And that's why I went, you know what? Let's stop hiding behind the curtain. Let's get out in front and let's see what happens. And I says, you know, let's knock some doors. Went to my health committee and says, hey, listen, we need to talk about this issue about CBD because it's helping people. I got fellow firefighters are sleeping. You know, they're telling me it's helping with their nightmares. It's helped me. I sleep like a baby. I'm no longer in pain. You know, it's better than taking melatonin and waking up all groggy in the middle of the night. It's better than taking Xanax and not waking up at all in the middle of the night during 911 calls. You know, we need to do something. They says, not a chance, and slammed the door in my face. I went, okay, let's go to my union. And my union looked at me and goes, that ain't happening, bro. Not happening. Don't care. Slammed my door in my face. I went to human resources and human resources says, nope, don't want to listen to it. We don't want to know about it. We don't, you know, that's still legal. We're not going to touch that. Slammed the door in my face. And I went, nobody's listening. Nobody wants to listen. So how can I get somebody to listen? I says, you know what? Let's create a podcast and let's make them listen. Because nobody can stop me. It's my own podcast. If they don't want to listen, change the channel. But if what if I get powerful guests on that show what cannabis or CBD has done for them? And so what I did, I started reaching out to, I think my third guest was Tommy Chong from Cheech and Chong. So I said, let's go all in and, you know, get these celebrities. And he was a great guest and, you know, told a few stories. And I says, okay, well, now who can I get? I says, let's get doctors who actually believe it works. And I had doctors come in and they started telling me what they thought about it and how they use it on their patients. I said, okay, now what? I says, we are basically the exact, they call us tactical athletes. Well, let's find the current athletes that are using cannabis and all that. And I started interviewing Stanley Cup champions, NFL Super Bowl players, and all these people who actually said their life was going through torment by being injected or swallowing huge amounts of opiates where their career was going downhill, all this stuff. And I says, you know, tell your story. And it slowly built up. That's what I decided to stay with. I says, let's turn it into an educational podcast where we can bring out the word of why these people decided to go to this plant medicine instead of pill-wise and how it helped. And hopefully, you know, the people on the department will listen to it and it'll catch somebody's ear and they'll open the door. And lo and behold, a year and a half, this contract talk, last year they invited me to do a presentation to the city manager, city commission during contract talks of why we should have access to at least low-dose CBD, you know, low-dose THC with CBD in it. You know, it doesn't matter if we get the medical marijuana card. Right now, we'll be happy with the low-dose. That'll help us sleep, help us with pain relief. You know, let's start a trial by there, and then we can discuss next contract terms if we want to go full medical card.
Well done, you, man. That's a brilliant story and very brave as well. And a lot of the similar motivations as I did for starting this podcast. So I very much relate to a lot of that. But yeah, it must have been a bit, you know, particularly in the area that you work in and with the rules being so strict and understandably so, right? That must have been quite a challenge to go up against that. Were you a bit nervous at the time or were you really just very determined or a bit of both?
Petrified, to be honest. But I was determined. I knew what I could do. I knew what I had. We wouldn't pop any tests. So I stayed with my product, you know. And a lot of people say, oh, you're just trying to sell more sales on your product. And I'm like, it's not that I'm trying to sell more sales. I want to pretty much make sure that the people in this department do not lose their jobs. Now, you want to buy somewhere else, that's on you. But I know for a fact that if I give you something that says THC free, you're not going to lose a drug test because I made sure that, you know, it's not THC in it whatsoever. You know, have a triple test, tested from the farm, tested twice when we get here. And, you know, I feel confident with that. But one of the petrified, I'll tell you one of the stories. It's funny. One of my chiefs called me. He goes, hey, I need you to come downtown. I'm like, what for? He goes, we need to talk about this CBD thing. I'm like, oh no, here it goes what I was petrified of. And I went downtown and actually he wanted to talk about buying some and if it would be good for him. So it was actually, I was driving all the way downtown sweating, thinking like, oh, how do I get out of this? Who do I call? What? I'm like, oh my God, this is not good. This is what I was always worried about. And he basically just wanted to talk about, you know, can I, you know, is it THC free? Like, we can take it. Yeah. So it'll be good for them. I'm like, yeah, it'll be good. So I ended up start selling to some of the chiefs down there, which is just like, I'm like, huh, stop sweating. Go back home, change some clothes.
Well, that is a great endorsement and a massive relief, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. Cool. Well, thank you, Gary, for sharing all of that, particularly the sensitive stuff. And I think, it, you know, in the second half, it'll be really kind of, it'll make a lot of sense, I think, in terms of what we're about to talk about. So, you know, we're going to talk about sort of traumatic stress and PTSD. And I think, you know, it'll make a bit more sense as you sort of elaborate on it because you're coming from a, you know, a very kind of a position that really knows this. But yeah, maybe we could talk a bit about what exactly PTSD is, because I think most people probably associate it with being in a war or being a soldier. But obviously it affects so many more people than just that.
Right, right. First responders up in Canada as well. And we don't really like to use the word PTSD. We like to use more like PTSI, because it's a traumatic injury to the brain. And everybody, some time in their life, had it, whether you've been bullied, whether you've been in a fight. It's a traumatic situation that you've been on, whether you've been confronted with death, you've been in a bad car accident, you've seen war, you've seen, you know, stuff that you're just not used to, that your brain just does not compute, basically, I could use the best word. So what ends up happening is that it stays in your mind, but it gets hidden in the back. So for examples, like you said, wartime, I always like to use the example of wartime. We're in the same compatible line as most military. The only difference with us in military is that you see the war on TV. Basically, you've seen the Rambos, you've seen the First Bloods, you've seen, you know, Platoon, those type of movies. You know, kind of, you're signing up for the military, there's a chance that you're going to see that type of destruction and mayhem. So you're kind of semi-prepared, but not really prepared, because nobody's ever prepared to see that stuff. But as a first responder, a firefighter, there's not a show on the television that actually dramatically shows what a firefighter goes through. Basically, for 20 to 30 years, we suppress every feeling in our body so that we can actually do the same job for 30 years. Because unlike the military, it's not a 4-year and then maybe another 4-year and then maybe another 4-year, depending on you. It's 20 to 30 years automatic. You sign that dotted line, you're in it for 20, 30 years. So from day one, you will see death of a child, death of a grandparent, car accidents with mangled bodies, and you will see that every third day for 30 years of your life, guaranteed. So that suppression of feelings allows you to do your job, and that maintains by suppressing it, blocks that in your mind. So that's basically what PTSD, it kind of hides, shelters it, and then there'll be one occurrence that'll happen. So let's say you have it kind of like, let's say with me, for example, since my daughter died, every time I go to an overdose, the memory of my daughter standing on life support, sitting, lying in life support in the bed comes back to me. So that memory always comes back, and it always comes back. And then for a couple hours, it's like, why wasn't I called? Why couldn't they bring her back? Why couldn't they? I just brought this guy back. He was basically blue, dead, no pulse. And this guy, now he's yelling at us, telling us why we're bothering him and wants to walk away, kind of thing. But yet I can't, never could, and don't know why it never happened to my daughter. So that's the kind of thing that PTSD, it brings back those memories that you kind of suppress, and you're trying to, I wouldn't say forget, you're trying to find the answer of why.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. From the way you describe it, I would imagine that anyone on the front line and the first responder, you know, not just the fire service, but ambulance and police as well, has some form of post-traumatic stress, right?
Correct.
Are there different types that are sort of, you know, are there different buckets that you put it into generally?
I would say yes, but I think every individual is different, because everybody copes with it in a different manner. And what's known in the fire service, police service, and I guess first responder service is basically their go-to is alcohol. So it's just to forget. They're kind of like, all right, you know, you had a bad day, let's go for a drink at the bar. It's a common denominator. And it's semi-paramilitary. So from the old, there's a paradigm shift right now from the old timers that would say, you know, kid, this is your job, you need to suck it up, to, you know, oh, now you need to talk about it and call someone. But being in our industry, it's very hard for us just to pick up the phone and talk to somebody we do not know. Because we're basically first responders, firefighters, nurses. If we work with the same people for 30 years, you're basically in a fraternity or a family for 30 years. So you know, because we live, sleep, eat, you know, 24 hours. So, you know, every third day. So you know everybody's life, everybody's kids, everybody's wives, grandparents, you know, they come. You know everything about anything. And so it's kind of like hard for me to go to somebody but I don't know and dial a 1-800 number, and the guy goes, all right, so tell me about your feelings. Tell you about my feelings. Tell me about your feelings. That's how, whereas if you're other firefighters, basically you'll talk openly, but still you don't want to feel like a wimp to them. You don't want to feel like you can't do your job. And that's the biggest thing. Like, I had one of the podcasts, I just reposted it the other day. I talked to one of the firefighters out in Colorado, and he had to leave the fire service. Listen, you can get into fire service at 18 years old. At 18 years old, your mind is not fully developed. And the first thing you can see is somebody squished by a dump truck. And then you got to see that. You can't retire at 18. You got to retire after so many amount of years. So you're guaranteed for 30 years in that service. So you're going to see stuff that your mind is not ready to see at 18. And it's the same thing in the military. So that's where they see that often with the PTSD. And he basically said he couldn't take it anymore, and he was diagnosed with PTSD. He had to leave the fire service, the thing that he loved to do. And his department basically never acknowledged it. Didn't even pay for his medical bills. He's going after his department for money, and they in the fire service, it don't exist. They'll put a poster on the wall and say, you know, call somebody, tell somebody. But if you're diagnosed with it, they just, you know, they don't believe it. They just don't.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy in itself. And, you know, we could talk about that in itself, but that's actually kind of where we're going to go. I mean, you mentioned it actually, you know, my next question is going to be about, before we get onto cannabis and other treatments, how do people typically treat it? And that's good and bad. So you mentioned alcohol, which obviously is a classic way to sort of avoid things or a hiding place. I assume other substances as well are used to excess to kind of block out the pain.
Correct. Other substances. And if you go to doctors, because you're going to go to doctors, try not to get diagnosed with it so you don't come back to work, so you don't have to tell your agency that you've been diagnosed with it. So that what they end up putting you on is putting on antidepressants. Well, those antidepressants cause other issues with sleeplessness. So what next thing you know, you got to go to Xanax to help you sleep. So you're on antidepressants, you're on Xanax to help you sleep, you're drinking alcohol to forget. All this becomes a huge cocktail of stuff down a terrible road to where finally, and this is what's been happening lately, especially during the pandemic, because I'll explain that a little bit more, a firefighter's not being able to take it anymore. Listen, for those people who don't know, the front line basically was, I appreciate nurses and doctors saying they're on the front line, and you know, I agree with them that they're on the front line, but the first person you meet as your first responder, their front line is in your house. So during the pandemic, when everybody's still trying to figure out, we never stopped. We never got a break. We actually were overworked, because what ended up happening is that going into these homes of other people, not knowing that it was there, firefighters would catch it. So therefore, firefighters had to do overtime. So you're talking about firefighters that would do 24-hour shifts, 13 days in a row, not allowed to go back to their families because they don't know if they had it. The departments you sign up for say, no, you're mandatory. You have to stay because, you know, 911 does not stop, doesn't matter what happens. So you will have to stay at work. That's your job. If you don't stay, chances are you're going to get written up or suspended or something. So you're forced to stay. So during the pandemic, we were overworked, overloaded, over everything. You know, now add the PTSD to that, add no sleep to that, add the extra medications, alcohol. You know, there has been a lot of first responder suicides that happened because it just couldn't take it anymore. And it just leads down that road. And I think 2019, 2020, there was 187 suicide from firefighter suicides. And most of the time they won't do it at home. They'll do it at the fire station because that's where they feel comfortable. So that's even worse. So now you have fellow firefighters see you, you know, unfortunately, one of my good friend's brother who works at a fire station right beside us and the seat beside us ended up committing, you know, suicide last week. So it's pretty relevant. So I'm trying to get the word out on PTSD that, you know, the antidepressant medications is not helping. It's just making us go drink more. It's making us, you know, there's got to be a different way of doing this. There's got to be something that won't cause us to go down that terrible rabbit hole and not come out.
Yeah. Sorry for your loss. And with that, actually, why don't we do start talking about cannabis? So how can cannabis help with this, with traumatic stress?
Well, we've noticed with the studies, even the FDA did a study, actually last year, the FDA did a study about low THC, I think it was about 9%, with about 11% CBD, to see how it would affect patients with PTSD in veterans. And they saw that it benefited them more. It saw that there was less chances of them going to their medications. They were sleeping better. Listen, the number one key to getting out of PTSD injuries or pain is sleep, all right? If you don't get a good enough sleep, we all know something's off the next day. It doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a first responder, whether you're a veteran. Yeah, go a couple of days without sleeping. You're going to know that by the fifth day, you know, there's a fog. There's something that's not happening. Your body feels weird. You don't feel like, you know, something's not going. So the number one thing is we need better sleep. We all notice that sleep aids don't work because it just, you don't even get REM sleep. You just kind of get this falsifying eyes closed. And that's what alcohol does. You ever think, oh, I'll drink to sleep because it'll make me pass out, but you really don't get sleep. It just kind of shuts you down. But cannabis kind of slowly relaxes you, relaxes the mind, lets you sleep, slowly, you know, builds that up, that sleep cycle up so that you can get better. And it doesn't have to be a high THC. And this is what a lot of people tell me, like, oh, you firefighters just want to take this so you can all get high. And no, in our shoes, we don't. We want something that we're not going to get addicted to, that won't lead us down to another medication. That's the whole point. You know, if we take a pharmaceutical, that's a completely different thing in our body, a different chemical. You know, cannabis is basically a plant that helps the endocannabinoid system that's natural in our body. So chances of us going down a different route to get a different medication to fix what the first medication is doing is pretty much unlikely. And this is why cannabis has become such a great tool to help with sleep, pain, PTSD, because there's no known side effects to it. There's no known addiction to it. There's no known basic overdoses, except for eating probably 14 bags of Doritos. But, you know, that's basically it. And again, I understand the whole concept of responsibility. I understand, you know, you still can use and get totally messed up. But a lot of us just are just asking for another way. We don't want the medication.
Yeah. And I mean, I think a lot of the problems that are being caused by cannabis are these increasing levels of THC in a lot of the products. And, you know, I'm reading a number of articles recently about the vape cartridges, because they're, you know, they're high 90% sort of THC. Like, that's really, really concentrated, very strong, and not great for a chronic use. But the use that you suggest, you know, where it's cannabis that has some THC in it, not getting around that, but doesn't have to be the super strong stuff. That just at least helps to relax people. And I think, as you say, I think sleep is the kind of cornerstone to everyone's healthy life, basically. If you get enough sleep, you know, you eat better, you make more better decisions, you got more energy to exercise and blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, I totally understand that. And you talk about THC, but as you said at the beginning of the show, you know, sometimes, like your job, for example, you aren't allowed any THC. You've also seen that a lot of, you know, some of your colleagues have benefited from sort of more broad spectrum CBD, i.e. without THC.
Correct. Listen, even with some of the studies that are coming out, it doesn't matter the content of the THC in it. What it contains is the actual product and the terpene profile. So if you can get two different same named brand cannabis, but the terpene profiles become completely different, you get two different results out of it. So what's ended up happening is a lot of companies right now are actually doing terpene profiles on the back of their labels instead of just THC, CBD, because that's what you're looking at. The terpene profile is basically where you're going to get a lot of the sleep aid, the pain aid, you know, without the psychoactive high that you need. So again, if you're looking more like a nerve pain or something like that, maybe a little higher dose THC, that's what you're looking for. But if you're looking for just regular pain, regular sleep, you know, something doesn't make you feel better, you're looking at a terpene profile or a low THC. You know, that's what I tell most departments. You know, it's no use. Again, we're not in it to get high. We don't care how high the THC is. We're in it to find a product that can help us sleep, because like you said, the better the sleep, the better we're going to feel. The better we feel, the better we can do our jobs. It's that simple. And I don't understand why, you know, the NFL raised their drug testing from 50 nanograms to 150 nanograms. The NCAA raised theirs from 35 to 100. For their testing, because they were afraid of, and this was my argument to my city, they were afraid of the secondhand smoke, which nobody understands, because we do a urinalysis basically for our drug test. And what ends up happening is if you digest, inhale, or absorb THC, your body chemically produces a metabolite that a urinalysis tests for. Now, that metabolite is absolutely non-active. It's non, you know, there's no psychoactive effects to it. It's just a inert metabolite. So we're testing for something that's not even psychoactive, that we can lose our jobs for. It makes absolutely no sense. If we could just change the drug testing to, you know, more of a THC serum type testing and get away from that metabolite, because if you inhale, your body's going to create this metabolite. So I'm living in a state where on every corner there's a hemp shop, there's hemp houses, there's medical cannabis grow houses, there's patients in their house that are actually smoking it. So we go to a fire and all these firefighters are outside, and next thing you know, they inhale it and they take a blood test, they all get fired. Makes no sense. You know, we got to come up with the times a little bit. Just change some wording, change the times, understand that, you know, we're not going to get high from secondhand smoke. We all know that. All right, that's not an argument. You know, we don't get high from secondhand smoke, but we will create some sort of metabolite that we could lose our profession on, and that's just unacceptable.
Yeah, and there's obviously a lot of issues with the system as itself at the moment, but that's hopefully changing slowly but steadily. And so are you also following the psychedelic story? Because there's obviously quite a lot of positive news and results coming out around MDMA as a treatment for post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, I started following that about a year ago when I think 2019 MAPS came out with their MDMA. I think it's 2019 or the beginning of 2020 came out with their first study showing basically that MDMA, they weren't treating PTSD. They were actually curing PTSD. So what I mean by that, and a lot of people go, oh my God, it's the same thing. No, treating PTSD is what I said before, is treating it with medications like depression medications, and it only works about 20 or 30% of the time treating it, which means you still are diagnosed as somebody with PTSD. We're just giving you medication so we can get through life. And basically, you're not getting through life because you're walking around like a zombie. Let's be honest. That's basically what depression medication's done. If you've ever seen anybody or know anybody that takes that type of stuff, that's basically what happens. They're basically a zombie. All it is just to cut the feelings out so you don't think of that and don't feel that. Well, the study that MAPS came out with, they found out that 67% of their patients after the one-time doses of using MDMA no longer had the symptoms of somebody with PTSD. That means they weren't treating them anymore. They're no longer diagnosed as a PTSD patient. And that just kind of blew my mind. I went, okay, well, this is something that I need to investigate. So I started investigating because I'm like, you know, there's no way that, you know, popping ecstasy is, you know, you remember the raves and everything, you know, is actually curing this thing. This is just ridiculous. And then I started doing more investigation and I found out that they were using this stuff back in the 50s and 40s. And what ended up happening is when they had the war on drugs and canceled everything, they also canceled all the products or all the systems to actually keep testing this as a medication. So they didn't just cancel the medication, they canceled the research, they canceled the development. So you had this 40 to 50 year, 60 year lag of nothing done with psychedelics. And now we're just trying to catch up and we're just starting to do the exact thing that we should have kept doing back then, was, you know, keep studying it, not just cut it off completely and make it a dead issue. We should have kept studying it. And so we're finding new ways to do it. And I'm really excited about the companies that are coming out, from everything from psilocybin that's coming out for traumatic brain injuries, from a few companies that I'm talking about. They're looking at psilocybin and CBD combos, because CBD is a neuroprotectant. You know, the United States does have a patent on CBD as a neuroprotectant. So if they keep telling you that they never knew about it, they're lying to you, because that patent's been there since 1999. So, you know, it's quite enthusiastic, because you're talking about, instead of taking a pill every day to make you feel like a zombie, you go to this nice place and do a session and you come out and it's just like, you know, it changes. Your life changes. It's only a one-time thing. And studies have been showing that it lasts. I think the last study, John Hopkins did psilocybin, it lasted for depression 12 months, one time. You know, so it's all this new stuff. And again, I understand, it's all got to be done responsibly. Let's be honest. You know, we're not looking to these medications, these compounds is not like cannabis. You know, like I said, you can overdose on cannabis by eating 13 bags of Doritos. These compounds are a little bit different, because these compounds kind of play with the realm in your mind that if you don't go in knowing what's going to happen or have an idea or have somebody explain to you what these medications may or may not do to you, you may come out worse than you went in with. And that was a scary thing for me. I wanted to see, okay, this is great, but where's the bad stuff? Because we all know this stuff was bad. It, you know, they said it was bad, so there's got to be bad stuff somewhere. Every time there's bad stuff. And that's what I started following. I started following exactly what could go wrong. And that's how I kind of like where I'm at now.
Yeah. I mean, that's a topic for another day. And it's funny that you use the word cure, because obviously it's quite a big claim. But, you know, the stuff that I've read as well is, you know, particularly for PTSD, it is like one or two sessions and the results are remarkable. And so, yeah, I also am kind of looking at results of that with high hopes. But yeah, look, you need to bring it to an end now, unfortunately. But it's been great having you on, Gary. I really appreciate your candor and your honesty. And I love what you're doing. So we'd love to have you back on at some point.
Definitely, 100%.
Cool. Cheers, Gary. Have a good day.
You have a good day, Anuj.
Cheers. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe, rate, review, and share the podcast. It will help me spread the good word on how this amazing industry is developing. I work with various cannabis startups to help them get funded and grow. I also work with corporates and international cannabis companies to help them understand and navigate the European cannabis sector. We're working with some great clients across the cannabis value chain, and we'd love to help you too. Please visit www.canverse.global to get in touch.